Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. My name is Cynthia Egan, and I'm thrilled to be here today representing Meta, where my team and I have the privilege of working with some of the most accomplished game developers in the world, including Rovio, whose success with Angry Birds has made it one of the most recognizable and beloved brands in mobile gaming history. With a rich background and long tenure in product leadership and in marketing roles across a number of gaming companies, including Take-Two, Electronic Arts, Activision, and Scopely, Lewis is joining me today. He is on the leadership team at Rovio, on the executive leadership team at Rovio, and is also their VP of Global Marketing. So thank you for joining me today.
Yeah,
Lewis.
Thanks. Thanks, Cynthia.
And it's our first time at Ad Week.
Yeah, we're newbies here, so.
Newbies here. I'm not too sure how many game developers have graced the stage of Ad Week, but we're really excited to be here today to learn from all of you and hopefully impart some lessons from the gaming industry as well. So let's dive in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So with over 3 billion downloads since Angry Birds launched back in 2009, how has Rovio managed to maintain the longevity and the relevance of the franchise?
Yeah, so it's quite an interesting story with Angry Birds. So actually, Rovio was founded, I think, in 2003. And you know, you said Angry Birds came out in 2009, so it was, you know, typical startup story of a company that went through lots of misery for many years. And then they caught lightning in a bottle with Angry Birds just when, like, the smartphone really was became a thing. And you know, like, many of you probably remember that time period when you know, the first iPhones came out and everyone was playing Angry Birds. It was all over the place. And I think one of the things that, you know, some of the veterans in Rovio did really well was they were really able to really harness that excitement around this game and turn it into a full-blown IP. And in fact, there were some leaders of the company back in the day, this is way before my tenure at Rovio, that kind of had a vision of turning Rovio into the next Disney. And so they really leaned heavily into, you know, the IP and transmedia, et cetera. Now, clearly, we're not anywhere close to Disney. and obviously that didn't ever really materialize. But what did happen was they, you know, because of all the licensing activity, because of all the brand activity and transmedia activity, Angry Birds is an IP brand that is crazy how much brand awareness. We do brand trackers all the time. And we actually have an awareness from a brand perspective that's up there with likes of Coke and Nike and whatever, which is insane. Now, we still have a lot of work to do in terms of brand love, brand heat, brand engagement. So there's more we can do there. I think the other thing that changed a lot is in 2015, we kind of fully leaned into mobile free-to-play. I don't know if everyone's familiar with that term, but, you know, games as a service, this idea of, you know, in-app purchases and games that kind of exist forever, hopefully. And that means that, you know, since 2015, we've been like most mobile gaming companies, engaging and creating, you know, best of class experiences for gamers and players of all different age groups and demographics every day. And so we serve millions of players with dynamic experiences, which we're constantly optimizing on the fly and improving over time, adding new content, adding new features, new experiences. But again, what is table stakes in the mobile games industry? So you know, other companies do the same. And the other thing that's also another way that we sort of invest in the brand is I have a partner in crime on the leadership team who is Hannah, and she's our VP of transmedia. Mm-hmm. So I look after the marketing of our games, but she looks after the transmedia strategy, and you know, she's now working on the plan of, like, what's our transmedia strategy and our brand strategy for the next 10 years. So really exciting stuff, hopefully to be announced in the next year or two.
That's great.
Yeah.
And 10 years is a nice long horizon to be thinking, you know, and again, in terms of the mobile gaming industry, this is a brand that's been around for a really long time. How do you approach creating that cohesive storytelling, you know, across those multiple platforms and mediums, and ensuring that adaptation remains true, right? Yeah. The original game property, kind of who you were in 2009 and fast forward to 2024, 10 years from now.
Yeah.
How do you guys think about that?
Yeah, so like we take a very different approach to how we manage our IP. So I've worked with lots of licensors over the years. I see someone from Gameloft here. Like I worked with, you know, Despicable Me, Minion in the past, and you know, Hasbro and a bunch of other brands, and a lot of brands really have very strict guidelines, really really control to the detail the brand and how the IP is used, and we take a very different approach. We're pretty flexible. Mm-hmm. We believe creators know their medium the best, so whether it's a TV series, or whether it's a puzzle game, or it's an action RPG game, whatever it is, we believe the creators know their best. They know the medium the best. And so what we try to do is give them a lot of creative freedom, but create a sort of IP sandbox for them to stay within, mm-hmm. right? So we do want to have some consistency, but we also want to give a lot of creative freedom in there. I think an example of this is if anyone's played a lot of Angry Birds games over the years, we have all sorts of different art styles of our characters, you know, and that's, there's a bit of a debate within our fan community about which is like the best Angry Bird art style. But we really invest in allowing creators to you know, take the IP in sort of the direction they want, as long as it stays within a framework. And then I have another colleague, Ben Mattis, who's our Angry Birds creative officer. That's his role, and he really looks after the brand and the lore, making sure that across our game projects and our transmedia projects, we have some sort of consistency. Because if we don't do it, I can guarantee you that our fans are going to be doing it and kind of like tying the pieces together of like, wait, but you know, Red did this and this thing, and Chuck did this thing, and the pig stole the eggs, this thing, you know. So we need to make sure that there's some. So he's got because we have so much creative freedom, he has sort of the challenge of like, how do you kind of pull everything back into a box? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of his gig.
So kind of constantly like opening up and then tightening back,
yeah,
but allowing for creative freedom so that the brand can evolve.
Yeah, and one thing just to sort of add to that is like, this has allowed us to have experiences that, and a brand that it really reaches all sorts of audiences. So like our TV shows, so we have a Netflix show, for example, that is really focused on Gen Alpha. And our games, our free-to-play games, are mostly played by Gen X and baby boomers. Although some people might be surprised about that, but which, you know, is also pretty typical in mobile gaming. So really, we have IP and experiences for all sorts of different audiences, and so that's kind of the challenge. It's a double-edged sword, right? So we're lucky because we have this sort of what we call cradle to grave brand, but at the same time, is like, how do we be strategically choose what are the right projects to do?
Yeah. And speaking of projects, so thinking about, you know, influencers and influencer marketing, and, you know, how do you guys think about that at Rovio? How are you selecting influencers to align with your brand, values, messaging?
Yeah, that's a great question. Very timely question, because to be honest, we haven't really done enough. We've tested the waters out a little bit. You know, we've recognized that we have a huge gap here. There's other gaming companies that are really good at this. Supercell, another Finnish company, are kind of at the forefront of influencer marketing when it comes to mobile gaming. Obviously, console gaming companies are very, you know, that's really where a lot of their marketing is. You know, yeah. In most mobile free-to-play companies, including Rovio, we've been very performance marketing driven, lots of user acquisition, etc. So definitely influencer marketing is something that we want to sort of upskill our marketing teams on, and so I'm actually hiring a senior person to kind of help build that craft within the company, and you know, one of the, like you said, we're new to Adweek, and so that's sort of like what stepping out of our little gaming bubble. Like, one of the cool things about gaming is we kind of share a lot of knowledge with each other. You know,
it's a very tight community.
Yeah, it's a very tight community, and even though we're like hyper competitive with each other. But it also means that we're kind of always in our little bubble. And so kind of coming to a thing like this is really interesting. And, you know, I'm also thinking about bringing, hiring a director of consumer marketing. Someone comes more from a different type of industry that can bring another way of thinking about how we market our games and stuff. So
Rovio is hiring.
Yes.
get in contact with Lewis. No, a lot of really interesting open worlds. And I love, you know, I've worked in the game industry for a really long time too. And yeah, I think that we're at a place in the industry right now where I think we have had, you know, it's time to kind of open up a bit more in terms of learning and understanding from other industries and other partners. Been successful for a very, very long time, but as the industry has matured, I think so does the gaming industry, and particularly the mobile gaming industry too. So interesting new roles and opportunities and developments over at Rovio. Speaking of that, in terms of from a technology perspective, right? So how are you guys thinking about incorporating transmedia strategies into things like AR and VR as that starts to evolve in the future?
Yeah, so like we, as I said a little bit before, like we want to have experiences across all sorts of different mediums. And of course, AR and VR is something very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. So what we try to do is we want to have experiences wherever the consumers are, wherever the audience is. So we look to understanding how these platforms are evolving from a consumer standpoint and you know, what is the sort of install base and that type of stuff. Like at the end of the day, we also want to make sure things are the right business choices, but it's definitely a medium that we find very interesting, and we also want to make sure that when we come to a platform that we tailor the experience to that platform, right? We're not just repurposing a product and putting it on, you know, as a term that we say in gaming, we don't just want to port something to a new platform. We actually want to tailor an experience that really makes sense. So with AR and VR, like how we need to think about, like, how do we actually make an experience that fully utilizes the uniqueness of that platform. We did have a few years ago a game called Isle of Pigs, which was an AR experience. Didn't really move the needle for us business wise, but it was, you know, from a tech standpoint, it was pretty fun, pretty cool. So we have a team that looks after projects that are outside and explores projects outside mobile free-to-play gaming within the gaming space. And I know that AR and VR is something that they're more than just keeping an eye on. So nothing to announce yet, but it's something that will, you know, TBC, where
look
we end up.
Look forward to hearing how that evolves. Bringing it kind of back kind of to day-to-day and thinking about AI and machine learning, and how are you thinking about that as a technology and incorporating it into your marketing strategies, your game development process? Is there any specifically, like, are there any examples where AI has specifically enhanced user engagement or optimized your marketing campaigns?
Yeah.
Thinking about AI.
Yeah, so I mean, like, this is a big topic. We'd have basically spent half an hour with this topic. We use it in different ways. Obviously, there are certain tools that you guys have that we're trying to
exactly. As power adopters of all Meta AI, yes,
leading
in that.
So definitely, you know, working with partners and trying to like maximize the solutions they have to benefit our own campaigns, our own performance, etc. I kind of split it into a few buckets of how we're looking at AI and machine learning, etc. Like we, on the product side, you know, obviously tailoring experiences in terms of the type of offers and content that we can serve different, let's say, segments of players. But also one thing that's very interesting about casual games is the difficulty of the game is something that we really try to personalize at an individual basis, because there is an optimal level of let's say challenge and progress that you want to find. But because you have players that have very different skill levels, so you'll have, you know, some players that are very skilled. And, you know, if you have one version of difficulty over the levels, you know, they can progress really fast and then they get bored because it's too easy. If you have players that are like less skilled, if you have that same difficulty, they might find it overly difficult and get stuck and then they leave the game. And obviously, you know, these are games that we want them to exist for years and years and have players continue playing. And so we find that there's like this optimal sort of level of challenge, but we need to adapt that to each individual skill level. So one thing that we've been doing with AI and ML is really having a very what we call dynamic difficulty, which is really making sure that that balance of challenge and progress is refined to the different skill levels of players, so that everyone has the same experience, irrespective of how good or bad they are at the game. On the marketing side, we talked a lot about leveraging your tools. I think one of the things we're doing, especially with our UA teams, our user acquisition teams, is thinking about how do we How do we kind of remove a lot of the heavy lifting for them to spend on more sort of strategic and creative endeavors? So we'll do things right now like having spend suggestions from our tech platform. So we'll do the tech platform itself will do an analysis of campaign performance on a per network level and a per campaign level on a per creative level. It'll start suggesting you should probably increase your spend here, decrease your spend there. And so they're using those insights, and that's to optimize towards future payback. So we look at the optimal ROAS that we're going to get, the return on ad spend that we're going to get, and it's dynamically giving suggestions to our UA team. I think the next level of that will be that some of these optimizations are done automatically by the system itself. And so that way, as I said, that our marketers are more focused on strategic and creative endeavors and less on the sort of, turning the knobs and stuff. And then I think on a personal level, I think like probably a lot of people here is like ChatGPT and other type of systems are just great for like copywriting and just it's a great growth hack
Absolutely. And then in thinking about just career development for your own team too, and the strategic opportunities that
will open up.
That will open up.
Yeah.
Kind of switching gears a little bit.
Sure.
How could you share with us any success stories or lessons learned from Rovio's collaborations with non-gaming brands?
Yeah. So obviously, like as I said, like we're a transmedia business beyond just purely a gaming business. And so there's a lot of different projects. I think, I've only been at Rovio for just under 3 years now. So a lot of the really cool stuff that happened way before my day. And a lot of, you talk to a lot of the veterans at Rovio, there's one project they keep coming back to, which was, sending Angry Birds to space for real. And so we did a partnership with NASA when we launched a game called Angry Birds Space. And if you guys know anything about our games, they're what we call physics-based games in sort of the slingshot games. And so we had this video that was taken with an astronaut in the International Space Station, and he was playing around with an Angry Birds plushie, a little plushie of Red, our character Red. And he was, explaining how physics works in zero gravity. That was, great content. That was more of like a marketing stunt type of thing. But, over the years, we've moved more towards like, how do we bring experiences, interactive experiences beyond just gaming? So, I don't know if anyone ever goes to Topgolf, but we have select locations across the world with Topgolf where you have dedicated Angry Birds experiences. Mm-hmm. We just opened up a cafe in New York with iSwee, so an Angry Birds cafe. And we'll see if we'll open more of those in the future. But really fun way to sort of just have like cool pastries and cookies and just a lot of like fun merch and things like that are very Angry Birds branded. One of my favorite things was that at least in my time is we did a partnership with Geico. So, Geico is obviously one of the biggest advertisers in the United States. Insurance companies tend to be. Mm-hmm. And insurance companies, no offense to them, they have pretty boring products. And so they're always looking for fun ways to kind of like have interesting ads. And so their ad agency kind of reached out to us and they had this great idea. So if anyone's, I don't know if anyone's seen the ad, but it was an ad for their home insurance product. They had like these Angry Birds like smacking against the house and it was just a fun
damage.
Yeah, caused all sorts of damage, exactly. It was a fun kind of gimmicky ad. It wasn't something, that was meant to advertise our brand by any means. It was just a fun collaboration. But we actually saw like our daily active users and our revenue on our games go up just because of how much, Geico puts into media spend in the US. So that was like they started in Thanksgiving in 2021, I think. Mm-hmm. And then went all the way to the post-Christmas period with that ad. And it really actually had a benefit to ourselves. So and then we do some other partnerships in-game, like to drive subscriptions to other services. Sort of that's almost like a B2B deal and stuff like that. So yeah, there's a lot of different fun things.
Yeah. And more on the horizon with the Sega relationship too. So yeah. Sonic, for those of you who might not be aware, Sonic the Hedgehog and Angry Birds worlds collided in a 1 week crossover event spanning five mobile titles recently. And Sega and Rovio announced this week, Sonic Rumble. It's going to be a brand new game that's being developed by Sega. It's going to be marketed by Rovio. And so this relationship, Rovio joining the Sega family, has opened up a lot of new synergies and opportunities post-acquisition. How are your audiences reacting to these, and how are you thinking about it?
Yeah, so one thing for you all to know about the mobile games industry is that it's consolidating a lot. There's a lot of acquisitions and M&A happening over the last, I would say, 4 years. Mm-hmm. And we were one of the few sort of independent gaming companies out there still at a reasonable size, and we had a lot of companies interested in us, and we ended up joining Sega as Cynthia said. And for me, I'm 42. I grew up playing the Sega Genesis. I think in Europe it was the Mega Drive, I think it was called. And so obviously Sonic and a lot of the other Sega IPs were just huge part of my childhood. And so for me to finally be able to play around with these IPs and work with them and have collaborations is super fascinating. And one of the things, as I said, Rovio, we think that we're pretty good at transmedia, especially within the mobile gaming space. Sega are on a whole nother level when it comes to transmedia. I mean, I don't know if anyone's seen the Sonic movies recently, but they've been hugely successful. And so one of the great opportunities here is for us to even learn how to take our transmedia strategy to the next level, learning from their successes and failures. So that's really great. And then, as you said, for us to be able to work directly with their IPs, they have a huge treasure chest of IPs that many of you probably remember from, especially from the late 80s and early 90s. And some of them are still very relevant today. And obviously Sonic being one of the most famous, especially in the United States and the UK and markets like that. Funny enough, Japanese company, Sonic is not popular at all in Japan. So, but
where is it popular?
In the US mainly. Here, UK, of course, in Western Europe, but the US is insane how popular Sonic is. And so we did a collaboration, as you mentioned, which was great. And we were worried that, how are fans going to react, because they're obviously very vocal on both the Sonic side and the Angry Birds side. Mm-hmm. But, thankfully they were very, very positive, which kind of reassures us and makes us think that there's maybe much more we can do with kind of bringing these two brands together. And then, as a marketing team, to be able to, as you said, Sonic Rumble, to be able to kind of take the marketing strategy and for that next Sonic project and working on potentially future games ourselves that we develop ourselves using some of their IP is really fantastic. So, yeah.
Leveraging the best of both.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So as transmedia is a core strategy for both Rovio and for Sega, how do you envision expanding the reach of these iconic IPs beyond gaming into other media forms?
Yeah.
Such as licensed products or feature films? Are there any specific plans or projects that you might be able to share with this group?
Yeah, so Sega just released recently a Paramount Plus live action TV show for Knuckles, which is one of the kind of side characters of Sonic. They've had two movies. They have a third movie coming out at the end of this year with Paramount as well. And that's going to be focused on this anti-hero Shadow. So again, I don't know if there's any Sonic fans in the audience, but Shadow being a really cool character. So that's coming out. On our side, we just announced last week, I think, that we have next week a animated cartoon series with brand new Angry Birds characters called Mystery Island. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that's interesting for kids, but it's also, it should be interesting for all audiences as well. So that's something we've been doing. We just announced for the last couple of years, we've had some Netflix animated shows for more focused on tweens audience. Mm-hmm. Called Summer Madness. We've had two feature films, animated feature films in the past, which hopefully some of you have watched. So the success of those projects, encourage us to keep looking at new experiences in that sense. And then going beyond, TV and film, as I said, we want to have more real life experiences as well. So we have a play park in Gran Canaria. We have a full world-class Angry Birds theme park in Qatar. There's a lot of these types of experiences that make a lot of sense for the IP. And so we're constantly looking, especially as I mentioned, Hannah, our VP of Transmedia, she's constantly looking for new partners to do all sorts of cool stuff with the IP. So anyone out in the audience knows anything, any good ideas to do with our IP, we're definitely open as long as it makes sense for our for our audience, our fans, and kind of respects our IP.
Just on that, the depth and breadth of all of these different experiences, and I think you use the word, cradle to grave?
Yep.
How do you end up prioritizing, like, you know, all of these different audiences, and given that, you know, it really does span when...
Yeah, like it depends on two ways. One is strategic and the other is opportunistic. I would say that with an IP like Angry Birds, a lot of inbound opportunities have come for things that are more family or kids and licensing. And actually, if you ask people, like when we do surveys, like, what do you think the brand is for? A lot of people will say for children or for or families. And the reality is our core of our business is mobile gaming. That's where we make the majority of our revenue. And as I mentioned before, the majority of the players that play those games are Gen X and baby boomer generation. So
maybe for this audience, you can just describe not the specific percentage, but the number of people, like, of the volume of people who play Angry Birds, like a small percentage are actually
kids.
Are actually kids, and a even smaller percentage are actually making purchases.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And then, yeah, that's the other thing is with free to play games, like, you have because the games are for free, you have millions of players playing, but then you have a subset of players that are actually spending, and then within those player spenders, you have a smaller group that make the lion's share of the revenue, right? These what we call high value players or high spenders. And so actually, to your question before, one of the things that we're doing now is trying to understand these audiences, these high spending audiences, much more deeply from a consumer standpoint, so that we can tailor our strategy more to doing activities that are more interesting to those audiences. So, you know, I've made a joke before, but, like, you know, maybe doing something with Martha Stewart makes more sense than doing something for, you know, a cartoon on Prime, right? So, I think, you know, we're a very research insights-based company, and so the more we can learn from the consumer habits and sort of the favorite brands and favorite, you know, sports and media, et cetera, that our high value players have, the more we're going to start tailoring our you know, this 10-year strategy that I was talking about, to make sure that we kind of hit more of those types of projects that make more sense for that audience, because we want to draw. Ultimately, with transmedia, we don't do it just for the sake of it. We do it because we want to invest in the brand, but we also want to funnel more people into our revenue generating products.
Yep. So wrapping up here, because I think we're close on time, just if you were to just look at this audience and maybe offer any bit of wisdom or advice or learning from the games industry that might be useful.
Yeah.
What would you suggest?
So one thing that, as I said, like, we're trying to step out of our bubble here in gaming, but one of the cool things about gaming is how competitive, but at the same time collaborative we are as an industry. Like, we really, really believe in knowledge sharing, because it's so difficult and so complicated, especially on the performance marketing side, where, you know, I think we're definitely on the forefront of most industries when it comes to performance marketing, that, you know, we're constantly sharing ideas with each other, and we're constantly having to reinvent ourselves. Like, some of you probably heard about what happened with Apple a few years ago, or with Apple tracking transparency, et cetera. And that obviously really, really kind of totally affected how our performance marketing was affected and performing. And so, you know, this idea of constantly trying to reinvent ourselves, always finding the next kind of really way of reaching our audience, et cetera. And so now we're in a place where we're thinking about, you know, how do we step out beyond just pure performance marketing? Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we want to take performance marketing, continue to take it to the next level. But at the same time, can we actually start learning from a lot of you folks on sort of more, let's say, traditional forms of marketing, more consumer marketing, et cetera. So influencer marketing, et cetera. So yeah, definitely this idea of, like, never resting on your laurels and always, like, kind of pushing yourself to learn, and then constantly sharing ideas with your peers, you know, even if they're your direct competitors.
Yeah, exactly. And we always say at Meta that, you know, our partners in gaming are often the canary in the coal mines.
Yeah.
The first to kind of react because of the hyper agility and focus on performance marketing. We can always understand which way the wind is blowing when it comes to working with
our gaming companies.
And with the gaming companies. I think that we're out of time, but Lewis, thank you so much for joining
me. Yeah, thank you
today.
Cynthia, for having me here.
Thank you,
Abby. Thanks, everyone.
thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @advertisingweek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.